It is Wednesday, May 27th, 2020. Thank you for tuning in. Menace to Sports, episode 99. One more to go, the big 100. Really excited for it. Got a couple things in mind that we're going to do and really just want to give you an update before we start the show. Really excited about everything we're doing right now. And I know that the show has been, instead of every week, we're doing kind of every 9-10 days. One, because of the quarantine, but also we've been working tirelessly on a lot of things. One big thing is the new website. If you haven't checked it out, menacetosports.com. We got a lot of stuff pumping out there. I mean, we're putting out articles, really different, unique articles. It's not going to be the run-of-the-mill stuff that you normally hear. We're working on a message board now, trying to create a community that we already have, really, on social media and Patreon. But we want to put it on a website. So we got that going. So check that out for sure. My favorite ones so far were the series of articles where we talked about, all of our writers broke down the impact that each brand, Nike, Under Armour, and Adidas, that side of the NCAA rules and what that's going to look like, because that to me is the most intriguing part. Like, how is Nike going to change the dynamics of college sports because they're allowed to pay, you know, endorse athletes now, young athletes, like high school seniors are going to be signing endorsement deals. So really cool, really unique perspective. Check it out. Also, video content. We've got a couple videos out, but I got a cool one that we're going to drop a preview today on YouTube. It's almost done, the final one, and it'll go out to Patreon, VIP, and Menace subscribers. What we're doing is we're trying to refine and fine-tune our plans for the fall, which is going to involve a lot of video analysis. I'm going to break down every Ohio State game and then some national games. And so I wanted to go through and kind of break down, I don't know, monumental games in my career or just college football. And I want to break them down, one, because it gives great content. It'll be really entertaining. So make sure you check it out on our YouTube channel. And if you want to see the whole thing, subscribe on Patreon and be a VIP or Menace subscriber. It's going to be awesome. So I think it's like 30 minutes long right now, the final one. And just going through basically the biggest plays of the Ohio State-Alabama national championship or semifinal game. I really was the national championship, but just breaking it down and talking about what happened, some backstory, just some never heard before side of that game. And then I'm going to go through, I already have probably 5 or 6 other games that I've downloaded and I'm cutting up to because I want to do them. But if you have any, if you have a suggestion on a game that you think you would love to hear and see and listen to me break it down, just shoot us a message on Patreon or social media or wherever. It takes a shitload of time, but it's going to be really awesome content. So really excited about that. Like I said, drop a message if you have a game you want to hear about. Also, the Zone 6 platform is now underway. It's growing. We're scheduling development sessions here in Columbus. So if you know anyone, high school, college, or pro athletes, it's pretty full right now, but really trying to be selective on who gets to do it. So we're going to have this development platform where we're going to actually train kids. I'm going to release drills, schemes, conversations, all on our Zone 6 platform. The coach's toolbox will be done here in the next week, I'm told. And then also the biggest thing, I didn't do a great job of presenting what all Zone 6 is. So it's a development for athletes and coaches. And I just want to provide my knowledge and wealth of experience to coaches and to athletes. And so it's a full-on consultation model, 24/7 access to me for questions, advice, scheme ideas, coaching points. I had probably a 30-minute conference call already this week about 4 verticals and everything I've learned about 4 verticals that I know, what I believe, just to kind of give you my insight. So if $15 a month, you can have me as your consultant 24/7. So definitely check it out if you're interested. If not, just listen to the show and enjoy it. Hopefully you enjoy it. But whatever you want or need about coaching, developing players, recruiting, you name it, I'm here for it. So I just wanted to give you that quick update, but enough about that. Let's get to the show.
That's why I don't read the newspaper, because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage.
Or do you do what everybody else in media does, just create some shit and throw it on the wall and see what sticks, which is what I see happening everywhere.
Where are we at in society today? I'm a man. I'm 40.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
All right, let's get this thing rolling. But before we get started, I two things off topic. One is very, I don't know. It's one of those things that I struggle with. I'm going to talk about it because I'm authentic and raw, and I don't really give a shit what people think. But I also, every time I bring something up like this, I lose a couple hundred followers on Twitter. People don't like to hear it. And I get it. Like, it's real life and people don't like real life sometimes. But the stuff that just happened with George Floyd, and please, if you haven't seen it, please look it up. What's what went on in Minnesota, these asshole cops, they're pieces of shit. They killed a guy. They suffocated and choked him out when he was not resisting arrest. He was handcuffed on the ground. Real fucking cowards. Real cowards. And it pisses me off for a number of reasons, mainly because this is not an uncommon thing. And I get it. So two things. One, I have a real problem with people that don't understand the Colin Kaepernick situation. And this is going to piss people off. I don't really give a fuck. Colin Kaepernick took a knee to make a statement that there was injustice towards minorities amongst the police force. Now, that's what he took a knee for. And it was inspired and encouraged. And actually, the idea was brought up by a vet, someone that served in the military. He said, why don't you make a statement? Like, take a knee during the national anthem so that people talk about it. It's trying to bring awareness to a problem. And people want to crucify him like he disrespected the flag or the military. He was just trying to make a statement. So I'm not going to go into that because I know that pisses people off, but it's just fucking real. He wasn't trying to do anything but say, hey, listen, there's some injustice shit going on and it's a problem. But we can all be privileged white people and turn our head and be like, nah, that's bullshit. He shouldn't have wrote a bad check. Like, fuck off. The guy broke a law. Who gives a shit? I don't even know if he did. We don't even know that. But let's say he did. This son of a bitch got choked the fuck out by this fucking coward cop. And now here we are. I mean, they're talking about rioting. There should be rioting. Because the fucking people, the guys aren't even arrested. And if they do get arrested, it's only going to be because the public got pissed. That's wrong. They should have arrested them without anyone in the public. If no one ever heard about it or knew about it, they should be arrested. And that's the issue here, right? It's absurd. And the one, and I agree with a lot of her posts, but Candace Owens posted a video where she was talking about it's the same percentage of a person of color getting shot by a cop as it is getting struck by lightning. So what's the problem? And I tweeted about it, and here's the fucking problem, Candace. We don't control lightning. We can't punish the clouds. We can't take the lightning to jail. And I promise you this much, if we could stop lightning, we would. It serves no purpose. We don't need lightning. We'd get rid of it, just like we should get rid of racial injustice and cops abusing the power. So I wanted to bring that up because I'm obviously charged about it. But the reality is this. I'm going to be honest. It is our job as majorities, as white people, it is our job as non-minorities to force change, because whatever the fuck is going on right now does not work. It's not changing. These cops do it and they don't get charged. They might they get like a paid administrative leave. Fuck off, paid administrative leave. How about jail? I'm telling you, God forbid, if I ever am like the people that are taking the video just standing there, I'm going to die. I'm going to tackle that fucking cop and make sure he doesn't kill that guy, and they'll probably shoot me. Just so you know, that's what's going to happen. I couldn't just sit there and watch that. That's just me. That's what I would do. But anyways, wanted to start with that just to get it off my chest. And if you don't agree, I apologize, but I don't really care. I think you're fucked up if you don't agree. But I'm going to go completely left field to right field on you right now. I found a video of my brother got married a year and a half ago. Right? I mean, I'm talking 3 months after I got fired. And I gave a best man speech in his wedding. And I watched this, girlfriend videoed like half of it. So I watched that and it was hilarious. I was like, man, I wish they had a videographer. That would have went viral. So I'm going to give you the best man speech that I gave at his wedding. Now, before I do a little backstory, obviously my ex-wife, I've talked about it a lot, created a major divide between myself and my immediate family and my entire extended family years ago. A complete narcissistic move. But anyways, not the point of the story. My youngest brother got married and we didn't go because we were not speaking to my whole family because they had a big falling out with my then wife. So anyways, we didn't go, and they invited us, but I always tell people jokingly that they didn't invite us. And then also a couple more points to make the speech make sense. My brother who got married is in love with Asians. Like, loved Asians always growing up, wanted to date Asians, just loved Asians. I don't know why, you know, whatever. I love everyone. So he also got busted in high school with beer in our for sale house fridge and got in trouble for stealing a golf club once. And I also have a little sister. You'll get it all when I recite the speech. Those are just some back stories that I needed to share. So here is my wedding speech a couple months after I got fired to a wedding of about, 300 people. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. For those of you who don't know me or haven't watched ESPN in 3 months, my name is Zach Smith, and I'm the brother of the groom. I prepared a phenomenal and hilarious speech for you tonight, but unfortunately, Sammy wouldn't let me give that one, so they have prepared this statement for me to read. I was strictly instructed to keep this, at worst, a hard 7 out of 10 on the inappropriate scale, so I will do my best. A wise man once said, "Love is like a fart. If you have to force it, it's probably shit." I have been fortunate enough to give a number of speeches in my life, and none more meaningful and important than this. Believe it or not, this is my first time speaking at a wedding. I've always looked forward to it. I was so happy when Colin asked me to be his best man and wanted me to speak. When I got to save the date, the rehearsal dinner details, the wedding invitation, it was all so exciting for my little brother. I truly look forward to checking the mail, getting the same thing for Carter's wedding one day. I wanted to thank everyone for coming out tonight to be a part of Colin and Sammy's special day. The amount of love and support in this room is evident tonight, and that is not by accident. People have flown in from all over the country, Texas, Georgia, you name it. It's truly amazing the lengths people will go for a free meal. Even Ingram was just saying, lobster tail and beer, three of my favorite things. I really want to talk about the bride and groom. Colin is one of the most inspiring, honest, handsome. Colin, I can't read your handwriting right here. Anyone who knows Sammy knows she deserves the perfect man to spend the rest of her life with. Unfortunately, you don't always get what you deserve in life, so Sammy gets Colin. Colin and Sammy, the true story of true love embodied. Let's take a deeper look at this union and holy matrimony. First, Colin, my little brother. You know how every family has that favorite? Yeah, that's not Colin. As a matter of fact, this has been the longest anyone has talked about Colin in our family, like, ever. So with that being said, let's talk about people that are really important in our family. Me, Carter, and Kylie. Colin always loves to throw out how he is not the favorite. And make no mistake about it, he has a bullet-pointed list of historical events to prove he is certainly not the favorite of our family. There's the lack of baby pictures and home videos, the lack of a video slideshow for his high school graduation. Oh, and the dirt bike he never got when he was 12. That dirt bike still gets brought up to this day. He forgets nothing. Just the other week, we got into a mild argument about $20 that he owed me, and he emphatically responded, "I don't care. You never paid me when I moved your shoes when I was 4, and you said you'd give me all your money." He forgets nothing. Believe it or not, Colin, I've always looked up to you, in a metaphorical way, obviously. You have an innate greatness inside of you, an even keel to be a voice of reason when you haven't been drinking. You're as loyal of a person as they come and always there for those you love. I can honestly say there has never been a time that Colin wouldn't find a way to help me if I needed anything. For instance, I went through a tough time not long ago when Colin and Sammy came over or offered to come over almost every day. If I ever needed someone to get a drink and talk, Colin would be there. Unless he had to drive further than a few miles, then he'd say, "But it's just so far." I remember when we were younger one time, I wanted to get some beer. Colin was there to leave it in the fridge for my dad to find, and then he was so busy getting in trouble that I was able to take it. Really a thoughtful guy. Then there was one time I wanted new golf clubs. Never mind, probably not the appropriate venue. This is truly one of those hallmark moments in your life, Colin. You only have a few of life's precious moments, and here we are at one of them. You have the day you met your bride, the day you asked for her hand in marriage, your wedding day, the birth of your first child, the day Swenson's finally opened in Dublin. Those moments that are what life is all about. I will never forget when I met Sammy. I looked over at my brother and I said, "Wait, she's not Asian?" Sammy, to the sister I never had and always wanted. I know that's an awkward statement to make, but everyone in our family knows that having raised my youngest sister, she is in all reality my firstborn daughter. Sammy, I can't tell you how happy we are to have you in our family, and probably more importantly, have you to now be in charge of Colin. Whew, it was a long haul for us, but he's officially all yours now. In all honesty, I think anyone that knows them knows Sammy was truly Colin's soulmates. She laughs at his jokes only when they're actually funny, calls him out regularly when he tries too hard and is painfully not funny. The saying goes, you will know you have found your true love not only for who they are, but who you are when you're with them. And that could not be more evident than with Sammy and Colin. Colin and Sammy are real homebodies. They enjoy their time together, and it's evident they are truly in love when you take a look at how often they just want to stay in and do things together. And fortunately, we no longer have to classify those things as premarital. Seeing as I was the first to get married and divorced, I would like to share some advice I can offer. Seeing as there's no better person in the world to share how to have a successful relationship than me. Here's the advice that I would give. Communicate, number one. Press pause. Attack adversity together. It's you against the world. Adversity will make the situations that bring you the closest if you attack them together. Sammy, make Colin think he is a king. We all know he's not, and you run the shit, but just make him believe it every now and then. Colin, I'll pass along to you advice that my grandfather, our grandfather gave me after Nanny died, his wife. Take at least one day a month to put your sole focus on showing Sammy how important she is and treat her like a queen. Sammy, don't hit Colin and call the police and accuse him of domestic violence. That's a surefire way to not have a successful marriage. Colin, if you ever get invited to the White House, never mind. In all seriousness, I don't know that I could have been happier for two people in my life. Colin and I were arch enemies and best friends our entire life. He is truly one of my best friends and one of the closest people to me in my life. And I could not be happier that he found Sammy. Sammy, you are such a blessing and such an amazing person. You are a first round draft pick addition to our family. And though it took forever to happen, we couldn't be happier to call you family. I would challenge you both to be abnormal. Be what we all witness here today. The example of true love and commitment prevailing over a society that doesn't value that. Because everyone here can tell this is and was meant to be. I, like most people, am sure, aspire to have a relationship like yours one day. And hopefully yours only gets stronger in the years to come. Congratulations. Thank you for including me in your day. And enjoy the magical journey of love and life you embark on moving forward. I will end with the toast that my grandfather gave at any function like this. He would say, let's be gay while we may and mix our love with laughter. I'll be true as long as you and not a moment after. To Colin and Sammy. All right. Well, I wanted to share that one because I thought it was funny. Entertaining, if nothing else. But I also wanted to show kind of, I guess, my personality and mentality after getting fired. It was certainly not to hide from it or run from it. It was to make light of a shitty situation, I guess. But anyway, that's enough nonsense. Let's start talking about some stuff that's going on. First and foremost, Tua Tagovailoa's brother is going to Maryland. Already talked about it a little bit. I actually called it because of Mike Locksley, but that should be, you know, I don't know how good the kid is. I certainly don't think he's as good as Tua, but that should inject something into Maryland. So I'm excited to see where Maryland goes the next, you know, 3 years, because I think Locksley's doing a hell of a job in recruiting. I know he's a hell of a football coach. I don't think they'll ever compete with Ohio State, but you watch out. They might reach that upper mid tier and, you know, start pulling off some upsets. Might beat a Penn State, Michigan, give Ohio State a game. God knows Ohio State has dropped the ball against lesser teams. So, but I wanted to bring that up. Also, our dumbass sports media personality of the week. And for those of you that didn't see it, Ralph DeRusso, who the fuck knows who he is? Some guy that writes for the AP sports writer. He tweeted out, this is probably 2 weeks ago, making college kids stay in a hotel the night before a game is an example of overspending to pacify coaches who feel the need to control everything. I'm sure it has some value, but it's a luxury that has become a necessity, quote unquote, because, well, they do it, so we gotta. I've never heard a worse take. Well, maybe I have, but that's a really bad take. I'm going to break it down to you. I was going to say I can't explain it, but the value of being in the hotel the night before the game, I don't know that you could do what you do as a college football player without being in the hotel. Here's why the hotel is important. Can you imagine? Let's say you're Ezekiel Elliott, biggest name in college football. You don't stay in a hotel room the night before, I don't know, the Penn State game, there's just hundreds of thousands of people come to Columbus, the dorms, people are partying on Friday night. I mean, up late, loud as shit. He's going to get horrible sleep. He's going to be distracted. He's certainly not only are you going to lose well, we'll get to that in a minute, the brotherhood aspect, but let's just talk about his physical ability to play the next day. It's going to be severely deteriorated because of his environment. So you talk about it's to pacify coaches, Ralphie, you stupid fucking idiot. It's not to pacify coaches. It's to give an athlete the best chance at success. That's the point of being in the hotel. I mean, we used to go to the hotel and we'd get there after dinner on Friday and it was like, I mean, brotherhood playing cards, watching movies, maybe do a quick walkthrough, you know, a quick meeting, kind of review the tips that you gave your kids in the meeting that day, go over a test that you gave them. I mean, you're talking about, this is preparation. And Urban Meyer's big philosophy was you got to be able to have fun and then lock back in. Have fun and then lock back in. You got to be able to lock in for a 30-minute walkthrough and then go hang out with your boys and you know, watch TV or whatever, and then come back and lock in for a 20-minute special teams meeting. Like, this was all about preparation, not to pacify coaches. It's to give a kid the best chance at success. And it also made me think how important just the brotherhood dynamic, the dynamic of team, of the team concept. We used to spend, I'm not shitting you, at least an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours every Friday morning. And I mean, they rarely changed, but we still did it. Going through the rooming list, every single room, where the room was located, who their neighbor was, who was in the room with whom. And everything had to be discussed, analyzed, talked about, because you can really, really impact a kid by who his roommate is. And how, if that kid's playing a critical role and he's a young player, man, you better put him with one of your big time leaders that can help show him the way. You have a guy who's irresponsible, you better put him with a really responsible guy who makes sure that he's not late to the team meal or to the walkthrough. I mean, this is not pacifying coaches to just go stay in a 5-star hotel to feel cool. This is calculated psychology. I remember, you talk about a rooming list. The rooming list for training camp when you move into the hotel or dorm or wherever you go is one of the most critical things in the world. And you talk to any former athlete. I used to talk to Paris Campbell, Michael Thomas, you name it. All of them would talk about, man, Paris used to say, my freshman year, man, I was struggling. Like, I wanted to quit. I wanted to leave. But he's like, I would stay up late and talk to this player, right? I would talk to Jalen Marshall. I would talk to Michael Thomas. And he would help me get through it. So I can't fathom the dumbasses that are getting paid to talk about sports that would say something like, staying in a hotel is to pacify coaches. Staying in a hotel is one of the most critical developmental tools and supportive situations for the kid. That's the point of it, for the kid. Now, does it benefit the coach to have all his players there so he can communicate with them and coach them up before the game? Absolutely. But that's not the intent. That's not the point. The point is that you get that kid every possible aspect of his 48-hour preparation right before that game to make him successful. Oh, that just triggered me. Sitting here like, how dumb can you be? Yeah, pacify coaches. Dumbass sports media personality of the week, Ralph D. Russo. Who the fuck knows what he knows? But I wanted to touch on that before. And then I'm going to get into a So You Want to Be a Coach part two. Kind of where I left off last episode. Just to give you, I don't know, just it's kind of story time. We got no sports on. So I take that back. The Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, that was phenomenal. If you guys didn't watch it, it was awesome. Really well done. My favorite part was when Charles Barkley started talking shit to Tom Brady and the sumbitch holed out from like 160. And it just shows the competitor he is. And he was like, hey, Chuck, shut up. But that was awesome. But outside of that, I mean, college players are going to be allowed back on campus most places, pretty much everywhere except Michigan, I guess. But they're fucked. I wouldn't want to play football either if I was them, though. It's embarrassing. But anyways, I guess they're going to be back on campus here in June, so that's exciting. But want to do a little story time just to give you the insight on the life down the path to become a college football coach, down the journey. And if nothing else, it'll be entertaining. It'll give you something you'll be like, holy shit, no way. So I kind of left off towards the end of my tenure at Florida, and I wanted to talk about the last thing. I don't think I've told, maybe I told the story. It doesn't matter. I'll give you probably a new perspective into it. My last year at Florida, and I already talked about how I really finally had value. I felt like I was a valuable coach, and the other coaches would have told you I was valuable, to the point where at the end of the season, Steve Adazio tried to convince the AD to hire me as the receiver coach at Florida. But Jeremy Foley at the time was like, we don't hire GAs. Like, this Florida, we don't do that. And he told him, he said, I'm telling you, whoever we hire is not going to be good as Zach. And so, but they had a rule, I guess, that you had to be a full-time coach somewhere. So I didn't get the job. I took a job at Marshall. But my last year, I finally provided like a lot of value. I felt great. I knew I was ready to be a big time, full time coach at a big college. I felt I was great. I was on my shit when it came to X's and O's. I was on my shit when it came to developing players. There was a player by the name of Carl Moore, and this is going to come full circle in a minute, who was a number one JUCO player in the country, came to Florida, had a decent year, and then really had an injury the next year and just was kind of getting pushed out. And the kid had a bunch of ability, and he wanted to work. So I used to go every morning at 5 a.m. with him and Aaron Hernandez. I think I told that before. And train him every morning. I mean, and Aaron Hernandez was in season, healthy. But Carl Moore was not, so we would go do drills every morning. And it's really why Urban hired me at Ohio State, was because he remembered that, coming in at 6 a.m. and seeing me and Carl Moore on a little turf field doing drills. And he was like, holy shit, this guy gets it. He's about developing players. He's about doing whatever he has to for players. So all that backstory for this. We get done with the year, right? We lose to Alabama in the SEC championship game. We're going to go play Cincinnati in the Sugar Bowl. We're in bowl practice, and bowl practice is bizarre because there's only usually like three coaches there. All the other coaches are on the road recruiting. The GAs are there. It's a very laid back and fun practice. And so we get done with practice. I'm going upstairs to start grinding again on the bowl prep. And Urban is getting on the elevator with me. He's all suited up. He's going, I think Marquise Pouncey was going to win the Remington. So he had to fly to Orlando from Gainesville to go to the Home Depot awards show. So we go up there and we get off the elevator. I had a missed call from a random number. I didn't, I didn't have the number. It was a 352 area code. I didn't know who it was. Whatever. So I didn't pay any mind. And then all of a sudden I hear something break in Urban's office. And I was like, ooh, that didn't sound good. And then I kind of peek in there, and Chuck Heater walked in there and walked out. And I was like, what's going on, coach? And he was like, apparently Billy Gonzalez just left a note on Urban's desk that he's taking a job at LSU and just put his car keys on the desk and said, I'm out. And I was like, holy shit. One, Billy G is who I worked with and for. I mean, I played for him at Bowling Green. I mean, I use the term played very loosely. I was a walk-on in his room. How about that? I was a walk-on receiver in his position group. That's about the extent of it. So I've known him, and he played for my grandfather, and he played for Urban. Urban was his position coach. Urban gave him his path to Florida and then on, and he's back at Florida now. A good football coach, I really like Billy G. But he left for Florida, or left Florida for LSU, because Greg Studraw was there. So he does that, and Urban's livid. And I mean, crushed also. This was like his guy, right? Former player, coach the same position as him. So I'm sitting there like, whatever, like doesn't affect me. Like it's wild. I don't know what to do. So I just start working. And then I have that voicemail from that missed number. So I call it, or I listen to the voicemail, and it's Billy G. He called me and left a message and said, hey, Zach, I need you to clean out my office, box it up. My wife is coming tonight to pick up the boxes. I was like, oh shit, I don't know what to do. So I go to Chuck Heater, who's, if you don't know Chuck Heater, he's at Colorado State now. He's been at a number of places, Ohio State, Florida, you name it. He's been at a lot, Notre Dame. He's been a lot of places, worked for Lou Holtz, my grandfather, Urban, just been around the block. A phenomenal football coach, really wise, wise dude. Like if you need advice, you go talk to him. It's like talking to your wise grandfather. You know, he'll sit you down and he'll give you advice and you walk out going, that's the best advice I've ever got. So I walked into him. I said, hey, Chuck, or I didn't call him Chuck. I said, hey, coach. I just got this voicemail. I don't know what to do. And I explained the situation to him, and he was like, well, let's go talk to Urban. And I was like, oh, shit, I don't want to do that. So we go in to talk to Urban, and he says, hey, coach, Zach here is in a tough spot, and I wanted to come to you because he just doesn't want to do anything wrong. He just wants to do what's right. And but apparently Billy called him and wants him to clean out his office. And Urban looked up, and he gave me the look that he gave me at Ohio State probably a dozen times, where he was about to go after me and try to just rip my soul out of my body because he was mad at someone else. And he did it all the time. So he looked up and he said, you a fucking bitch or you a real man? And I was like, excuse me? He was like, that guy just fucking left for LSU. He took from your family. He took from your wife. He took from your fucking kids. Mind you, I didn't have kids. He's like, he just took your whole fucking livelihood and shit on it. He wants you to be homeless. What are you going to do, pussy? You going to go fucking do what he wants? Or are you going to be loyal to the people that actually want you to be successful? And I'll never forget. I'm 22 years old. And I was sitting there, my jaw on the floor, like, holy shit. Like, I don't want to get yelled at anymore. I know that much. I was like, yeah, I'm good. And I walked out. I was fuming mad. Like, no one talks to me like that. But he made his point, but he took it out on me. So I did not box up the office. I took that advice pretty close to home. So that was the end of my time at Florida, really. Well, then we went to the Sugar Bowl. I coached the receivers for the Sugar Bowl, which was awesome. My first experience being on the field. I spent 5 years in the box, and then the rest of my career after that, I was on the field. So it's vastly different. But then I went to Marshall. You talk about culture shock. I went from Columbus, Ohio to Lexington, Kentucky, or Bowling Green for a year, Lexington, Kentucky, Gainesville, Florida to Huntington, West Virginia. Wild. Wildly different. Great place. I loved it. I want to tell you my story about how I got my first house, right? I rented it for free, $0 a month. I landed in Huntington and I met this guy named Dave Miller, who is, I don't know. He reminds me of, the Beverly Hillbillies. It's like struck oil. And so he had money. So he actually had a company that him and his brother sold, but he's a big time drunk, big time redneck. So his brother and him sold this company. So he was a big booster. Well, my first day there, I land at Marshall. I run into him. He says, "Hey, where are you going to live?" And I was like, I literally just landed at the airport and drove here with the head coach, Doc Holliday. I don't even know where houses are. I don't know. And he was like, "Well, shit, why don't you live in my neighborhood? I just bought my neighbor's house. You could live there for free." And I was like, holy shit. I mean, this guy's got to have money. He's at this exclusive booster function with the head coach. It's probably a nice neighborhood and free. I can get down with free. So I'm like, all right. So I'm like, done. Let's do it. What he didn't tell me was he lived in the one of the nice neighborhoods in Huntington up in Ritter Park. It's on this mountain and a bunch of nice houses, except for his neighbor's house. He bought it because his neighbor's house was the only piece of shit house in the neighborhood because he's going to tear it down. But he didn't want to pay to tear it down yet. So he figured he could just let me stay there. This place, this ended up being like it was like being at the circus every day. One, the house had a crack down the middle of the house, the whole house from like the foundation up the wall, up the ceiling, the whole house was cracked in half. And it was a nightmare of a house. And on top of that, this guy that I was thinking, this big time booster, man, he was wild. So he would stop by all the time. He would get drunk at a bar or restaurant and ring my doorbell, want to come in and watch ESPN and drink moonshine or whatever, you know, whatever. And just drunken escapades by him all the time. So then one time he comes in and he's sitting on my couch. We're hanging out. I'm like, "Dave, all right, you got to go, man. I have a almost one-year-old, a baby that just went down. My then wife wanted to go to bed. I wanted to go to bed. I said, you got to go." So I kind of pushed him out the door, got him out of there, locked the door, went to bed. Woke up in the morning about 5:30 to go to work. I come out. His shoes are in my house now. I'm like, what the hell? Did he leave his shoes? I turn to the kitchen and there's leftovers everywhere. I'm like, holy shit, this sumbitch is in my house. I searched the whole house. He's nowhere to be found. Like, you know, he owns the house. He has a key. He must have just let himself in, right? So I'm like, oh my, I don't know what to do. I check the whole house. I make sure my family's, he's not going to pop out on my family. So I got to go to work. I get a text from my then wife, a picture of him. He had made it out of my house without his shoes, obviously left food everywhere, and he passed out face down on his driveway. And it was like 11 a.m., passed out cold in the sun. So that was my living situation at Marshall. But I love my time there. I really love my players there. I had some great players. Aaron Dobson ended up being, I think, a second rounder. Antavius Wilson was a really good player. Troy Evans, just some really, really good players. And I really loved it there. But this is when Urban and I had a major falling out. I go to Marshall. This is the same time I left, around the same time Urban took his sabbatical, right? He took like a couple months off. He resigned and was going to retire. Then he decided he just needed time away. He was going to come back. Steve Adazio was going to run the program, right? So while he's on his vacation, I guess, from football for health reasons, that kid I told you about that I was training in the mornings, he doesn't like the new receiver coach, a dude named Zach Azani, who's like one of those like rah-rah weird fake coaches. He doesn't like him. They don't get along. He wants to transfer. So the kid's talking to me because him and I had a good relationship about transferring. I don't want anything to do with it. I mean, the kid's a really good player and I would have taken him, but I'm calling Steve Adazio, who's, I think I mentioned before, is like a mentor to me. So I'm telling him, all right, Carl Moore's hitting me up about transferring, blah, blah, blah. What do you want me to tell him? I'll try to help you keep him there, whatever. I'll do whatever you guys want me to do. And he's like, if anyone knows Steve, he's an O-line coach, tough as shit. He was like, oh, fuck that kid. You can have him. He's cancerous. If he doesn't want to be here, fuck him. You can have him. Well, Steve's acting. He's running the program. So I'm like, all right. So the kid wants to transfer. Steve says we could take him. I still don't really want to get involved, but I mention it to Doc Holliday, our head coach, just because I want him to be aware that this kid might get a release and we might be able to have him at Marshall, which would be a big get. So we need a spot for him just to kind of put it in his head. Well, I mentioned it to Doc in front of the compliance officer. The compliance officer is like the cop that works at the high school, right? He's kind of part of the high school, but he's also kind of a cop. So it's like he's kind of on your side, but he's also kind of trying to get you in trouble. Independent, I've had good ones and bad ones. So I said it to Doc in front of this compliance guy. Well, this guy freaks out like this. I'm going to talk to this kid. He sends a release, a permission to contact the kid to Florida. I didn't ask him to. We didn't know he did. So he sends it. The compliance officer, Jamie McCleskey at Florida, gets it and puts it on Urban's desk. Well, that happened to be around the time Urban was coming back from his sabbatical. So he gets this, he finds out about this Carl Moore thing. He's calling me nonstop. You need to tell the kid this. Tell the kid to come see me. Ask the kid this. You got to help me keep him. We need him here. Blah, blah, blah. So I help him. Ultimately, I help the kid stay at Florida. Right after I finish helping Urban keep the kid, Urban gets this release form. And now the AD and the compliance officer and Urban have all decided that I was conspiring to get this kid to leave Florida and transfer to Marshall. Whew, that's a lot, right? I hope you followed that. So this kid, Urban calls me. I get a phone call. Actually, I take that back. His secretary called me. Said, hey, Zach, this is Nancy. I was like, oh, hey, Nance, how are you? Like, really, we got along great. Really like Nancy. Don't know why she's calling me. She said, coach wants to talk to you. I was like, he just called me on his phone 10 minutes ago. Why didn't he just call me? Well, I get put on. I'm on speakerphone with the compliance director, Urban Meyer, and the AD at Florida. He says, you made a big mistake, Zach. I was like, what's that, coach? He said, you don't fuck with me. You don't fuck with my players. You tried to steal this kid from us and you broke a bunch of NCAA rules. And I hate to bring it to you. Your career's over. I'm going to bury you. You're never going to work in this industry again. I was like, Jesus, what? Jamie McCleskey comes on. Why did you think you could talk to this kid? I told him, I said, well, and the best thing I did was I put everything right back on Urban. I said, well, Jamie, I'm going to be honest with you. I was raised as a coach by Urban, and his biggest thing was genuine player relationships, and that's what I built. And that's why when the kid wanted to transfer, he reached out to me. You probably should ask your receiver coach why he's not the one that's talking to the kid, because the kid doesn't trust him, doesn't like him as a coach. That's your problem, not mine. I let the compliance guy have it with Urban on the phone. I was like, no, if you want this kid to stay at Florida, you should be able to get him to stay at Florida. It's not my fucking job. Florida doesn't pay me anymore. I didn't break any rules. And Urban's like, that big mistake. You're going to regret this for the rest of your life. You'll never work in this industry again. Hung up on me. I was like, holy shit. Like, this guy was my mentor, right? Like, gave me my start, like, developed me, taught me everything. And he just told me my career was over. I didn't speak to Urban Meyer for 2 years until I was sitting in a hotel room and he offered me the job at Ohio State. Think about that. That's how bizarre this industry is. The guy who told me 2 years earlier, your career's over, I'm going to bury you and ruin you, didn't speak for 2 years. Then when he gets the Ohio State job, I think he had perspective that, you know what, I was a mess. Everything was a mess. I don't really know what happened, but I want this guy to be on my staff. So he hired me. I mean, I went from being buried, career over, to getting hired. So I just want to tell those couple quick stories just to give you kind of insight into the world that I lived. I mean, every coach has a different journey. But last thing I want to do before we get out of here, I want to talk about the new APR was released. And the APR is a huge deal in college football, recruiting, basketball, you name it. And here's why. APR is so much more important than graduation rate. Because graduation rate is the percentage of kids that graduate. Ezekiel Elliott didn't graduate from Ohio State. So him going to the NFL and making millions of dollars, which was a very, very smart decision, that hurts Ohio State's graduation rate. That's fucking stupid. That's really, really stupid. So the NCAA created this thing called APR. Well, the APR tracks, basically it tracks how well your academic progress is and your academic support is for your student athletes. And here's how it goes. Every scholarship athlete that you have gets 1 point for staying in school and 1 point for being eligible. right? So those two things happen. If everyone's eligible, everyone stays in school and graduates, you get 1,000. That's it. Because you take the total points that you got divided by points possible times 1,000, and that's your APR grade, right? It really tracks how well schools are able to get you to graduate and how well they are to how well they do of monitoring your academics and keeping you eligible. It's phenomenal. If you want to look at anything to evaluate academics, the support for a program, just look up APR. I wanted to throw a couple at you because there, I mean, as always, there's some you're like, holy shit. First of all, Washington, number one in the country. I didn't know that. I didn't know that they had a program like that, but 999, almost a perfect score. Ole Miss was 2. Northwestern 3. Those are pretty common. Here's where a couple more fell. Clemson at 5, Alabama at 6. And those are of note, the two highest, you know, one, the two probably most successful programs, and they're both top 6 APR programs. So that's phenomenal. Phenomenal things they're doing at their program. Ohio State is at 18, which is respectable. Michigan's at 27. Texas, Nebraska, and Florida are 43rd in the country. Miami's at 49th. And then we get some, I mean, then you start getting in the, oh shit. Purdue, which is a great school, great academic school. And so the other part of this is it takes a couple years for this to get accumulated. So this is not an indictment on Jeff Brohm's program, but it's an indictment on the academic support. Like Ohio State has it. It's called SASO. It's led by this guy named David Graham, who's, he's something else. But that's an academic department, and the football program has a lot of influence on that academic department, but they are ultimately responsible for the APR with the coach's influence and help. So I don't know what's going on at Purdue, but 106th in the country. Michigan State was 109th in the country, 952. That's a big yikes for D'Antonio. And you know what they say, when things are falling apart in a program, it's everything. And the smallest thing that might not, you know, be the thing that you point to overall might be the first indicator. Like if academics start to slip, but they're still winning on the field, that's an indicator that they might not be successful here coming soon, right? Michigan State 109, LSU tied at 109. And then my favorite, old Willie Taggart, 125th in the country, Florida State with a 942 APR. That's horrific. And I mean, just, I'm telling you, I'm praying for the staff at Florida State. I know a couple guys there. They got a hell of a problem. I mean, shitty recruiting, shitty development, shitty academics. Oh, by the way, there's a pandemic. You can't meet with anyone or do anything to try to make it better. Just a nightmare. But I wanted to give you a little perspective into APR because I think APR is the best indicator of an academic support structure at a school. So really cool to look at where they're at and to see where they're trending, right? If a team I should pull up previous rankings, but if a team went from 100th to 43rd, that means that they are really making progress. But kudos to Clemson and Alabama for being that high, Ohio State for being in the top 20. Just a really cool stuff. So I would invite you to look it up. Just Google NCAA football APR, really a telling statistic. But hope you enjoyed the show. Excited for the 100th episode. I got some more analytical stuff, some more football IQ stuff, just kind of some more usual content outside of story time and just my opinion. So excited about the next episode. Do me a favor, and if you could, hit us up on Twitter, @MenaceToSports. Tweet about the show, trying to make it grow. The only way we make it grow is if you help. Help us make it grow, man. Tell 5 people about it. Tweet about it, post about it on social media. Shit, make a TikTok about it. Maybe we'll come up with a TikTok dance. But thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, reach out if interested in advertising, if interested in becoming part of the movement, the website, you name it. Zach, Z-A-C-H, @menacetosports.com. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you're entertained. Hope you liked listening. And as we say, if not, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
That's why I don't read the newspaper, because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage.
Or do you do what everybody else in media does, just create some shit and throw it on the wall and see what sticks, which is what I see happening everywhere.
Where are we at in society today? I'm a man. I'm 40.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my ass.